KSL at Night.
Welcome back to KSL Night. I am your co-host, Rusty Cannon. I'm here with my brilliant co-host, Mara Caraballo. It's another beautiful evening in Utah.
And it's so nice.
Yes, it is. It is beautiful outside. Hope everybody's enjoying it. And we are going to enjoy our next guest, one of the smartest people on Capitol Hill that I know of, our Utah State Auditor, John Dougal. I like to call him Frugal Dougal, but he also goes by John. And so thank you for joining us tonight, Mr. Dougal. We want to talk to you about an op-ed that you recently wrote.
Hey, it's great to be with you too, especially the brilliant Mara Caraballo. So,
you know,
thank you so much.
We do like each other, don't we, John? And
absolutely.
I'm just always going to give a shout out to this because I hope I'm not outing you, but I learned a month or two ago that in addition to being the state auditor, which you do a heck of a good job, in addition to running for a congressional office, you have found time to be a law student. So, holy
cow. It
has
been on my bucket list for 40 years. My grandfather was in the last group in Utah to get licensed before they required a bachelor's degree. And I learned, heard all his war stories. And so it's been on my bucket list. I'm more than halfway through. And it's been a great experience. They actually call me law school dad.
That is terrific. So one of the things I'm excited about to talk to you tonight is you wrote a really thoughtful editorial about open municipal broadband. And this will not maybe surprise you, but you and I disagree a little on this. So I'm excited to hear your point of view. Walk us through a little bit about...
Mara, it won't be the first time you were wrong, and that's all right.
I've learned to accept it. Walk us through a little bit what your subject was, a little bit of your point of view. We're talking about internet networks, right? And who owns them? Where do we get our service from? And Utah has about a 20-year-old network that was one of the first in the nation. Walk us through your opinion editorial on this.
Sure. Let me step back on the big picture, and it won't surprise you. I express lots of concern when government gets into activities I think should be better suited in the private sector. And that can be utilities, electric and gas service historically, or you look at things like housing, or when you even talk about stadiums and arenas that we had discussions about this past legislative session. There are so many activities that government gets involved in that I think should be left to the private sector, left to private investors to take the risk rather than putting the risk on government. So when you roll into internet services, this is one where we've seen various failures over the past couple decades in Utah. Various cities get enamored. They're going to get involved with providing internet services in their communities, and then they run and compete directly with private sector folks. And that causes me concern, especially when too often what they're pitching doesn't actually materialize in the manner that they're forecasting, and therefore taxpayers are left backstopping the investments or the activities and are left bailing them out. And it's one thing if the customers actually are fully paying the bills, and it's a whole nother thing when you're expecting the taxpayers to go at risk to fund these infrastructures, and I think that should be left to the private sector.
So one of the open seats in Congress right now, obviously, of which you're a candidate for, with Congressman John Curtis, he actually wrote an op-ed about one of these situations in Provo that some might be familiar with. Invested about $40 million and sold the entire network for $1. You mentioned that in the op-ed. Yes,
$1. $1. Think about that.
Yeah, and he had an interesting quote from his op-ed where he just said they had to come to terms with the fact that they had a decade-old network. And just like a computer that's a decade old, it was near worthless. And so is that the issue that you're getting at, is that it's a risk that you don't feel should be borne by government or / taxpayers?
Well, one of the big risks is these can be expensive networks when you think about trenching up to everyone's house and just the cost of deploying the infrastructure. And then you have to keep it updated on a timely manner. And then you've got to have personnel who actually understand what's going on. And too often the folks that are on the boards or overseeing these aren't technology folks, nor do they have their own capital at risk. When you have private investors who are very invested to make sure they get a return on their dollars, they're incentivized to make sure they get a good deal because they want to get a return on their capital.
So,
unfortunately, sometimes when it's government officials, They don't have the skin in the game.
Is this just unique in your mind? I mean, government underwrites base infrastructure all the time. So it seems like maybe one of the questions is, what's basic infrastructure? Like, I don't hear any of us complaining that government's paying for roads or water sources, because we would all argue that they're like almost essential. Have we reached the point where internet is almost essential? I mean, it sounds like that's part of it. Or it makes me think of cooperative marketing, the small marketing that we do for buying energy. There are many co-ops in Utah, government co-ops, that combine together to buy energy. And I think that's a great way. So part of is it partly the choice of internet being an infrastructure that doesn't rise to the occasion for you?
Well, you talk about co-ops, and let's talk about private co-ops. Back in the day, we had private co-ops delivering electricity, especially out in rural America, rural Utah.
Right.
We have private telecom companies. And so these are co-ops that have come together. And if we want to talk about private co-ops for internet, hey, excellent. I have absolutely no problem with that. Those are private folks pursuing this. It's when they put the risk on the government and say the taxpayers are going to backstop this thing. That's where I get very concerned, because I see time and time again where government gets enamored but lacks the sophistication, buys into a dream, and then is left holding the bag. And then when the taxpayers have to pay, then it squeezes out other services. It squeezes out services like police and fire, puts extra burden on where are those limited dollars going to go. It squeezes out sometimes investments in the road infrastructure that we're expecting. And as you look right now, okay, 20 years ago, we were thinking, okay, it's got to be, you know, fiber or cable to the home. And now we're getting so many other wireless opportunities and so forth. We don't know where technology is going to go. It moves much quicker than government moves.
So
and that's one of my other concerns.
As always, a well-stated point of view. John Frugal-Dugal, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks so much.
Rusty, let's continue the conversation. I'm going to just openly tell you what I'm reading right now. Utopia, which is a what they would call the largest open access community fiber driven fiber broadband in the country. This started, gosh, about 20 years ago. It's I think 19 formal cities, but it will tell you it has relationships with about 50 cities.
Yeah,
a variety of different relationships there. Mm-hmm. I'm going to read their top five things that they say work. Yeah. Now, this is exactly, I believe, the kind of enterprise that Dugal articulately said, gosh, this worries me, the government. Yeah. So these are cities, keep in mind. They would say that the power of the choice is in your hands. They're saying the city, if you will, provides the road. And then you get to choose the service provider. Mm-hmm. They say the competition between service providers keeps it consumer friendly. They're arguing that it keeps the prices down. Mm-hmm. They say ease. One network, one installation, so you could switch service providers and not need someone to knock on your door and trench your lawn once again. It's community owned and operated. I love this because this is both sides of the coin. We just heard Dugal say that what he believes the risk of community. They're asserting that it empowers local communities to take control of their digital destinies and ensure equity between high speed. When Utopia was formed, the rural divide, who had access, the haves and the have-nots, which we know still exists because that existed during COVID. And their final top five reason is promoting innovation and economic growth. They think that these cooperative networks allow for more agility in adopting technologies. So that would be sort of the counterpoint to that.
Yeah, it's one way to look at it. I mean, obviously, we have 20 years of battle scars that we're one-sided on this issue as far as Utah Taxpayers Association. The other side of the coin is Utopia is over $300 million in debt at this point. They go further in the hole every year.
But the subscriptions are the bonds. They're bonds. They're not tax. They're not direct in taxes from a general from the general coffers of the city.
Actually,
they've financed this through bonding. The original 12.
Yeah.
But the rest of the services are bonds, and they do know that their subscribers are paying the debt package on that bond. So they have worked out a recent model in which, as Dugal said, hey, if the subscriber, the user, in Utah, we love user fees. We don't like taxes, but we love user fees. It looks like Utopia is arguing that that's the model that they have gravitated to.
Yeah. Well, it's a lively debate. Obviously, lots of different opinions, but this is the fun part. We get to talk about it here and go through the issues. And so we're going to be talking about a little bit more tonight. Go ahead and stay with us, and we'll see you on the next segment for KSL at Night.